You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
So Bills Colts, Josh. That should be fun, right? We're not overlooking them, are we?
The Bills play a game this week?
It's not Chiefs week yet. I'm having a tough time with that, Josh. I'm having a very tough time with that.
It's hard because I want to say that and be completely serious, but I'm not. I'm honestly, like, everyone thought last week might be a trap game. I'm scared about this one.
This is the one for you.
This is the one where I'm scared because Jonathan Taylor, first of all, when he did that to the Bills, not only did he do that to the Bills, he did that to me in a fantasy football game. Yeah. To like, I don't remember what week that was in that year, but it just tanked my fantasy season, whether it was playoffs or like close to playoffs. For whatever reason, I didn't win a championship that year because of Jonathan Taylor. I can't remember if it was playoffs or like just outside of playoffs, but he's the reason why one of my best fantasy football teams did not win the championship.
That's a shame. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I don't want to say I am overlooking the Colts, but I am at a point now where like I am very much directing most of my energy towards next Sunday at 4:25. Like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And
right.
I don't feel great about it, but like I'm a fan. Like, that's what I'm going to end up doing is just, we're going to get tweets here in just a second because I put out the vibe check and how are we feeling. And you can join the show as well, 803-0550, the number to call. How are you feeling about this Sunday? But like, since like week three, I've been looking forward to January. They started the season 3-0, and I was like, cool. All right. So all the fears that they're not going to be a playoff team, those were exaggerated. We're going to be fine. I'll see you in January. Now we're kind of getting through the season. Some of the big games are coming up, Kansas City, San Francisco, Detroit, what have you. I'm finding myself looking more forward to these, and I'm not going to fight against it either. I won't be watching this game. I'm going to be catching up on it as I go. I'm going to be in a Charlotte airport for the entirety of the game. So, I mean, that's going to be a big reason why, is that I'm going to be trying to catch up on it on Twitter rather than, like, fully watching it. And part of me is also, like, I mean, we talked with Kevin Bowen yesterday, and even the rushing yards point. We brought up Jonathan Taylor, and he goes, well, he was great with Anthony Richardson. He's less so with Joe Flacco. And so that kind of leads me to think, like, okay, all right. Like, am I freaking out a little bit too much? Because I think you're right. A lot of Bills fans, especially after seeing what Devon Achane was able to do last week, what Derek Henry was able to do a few weeks ago, there is some nerves. Now, I will say, I know Joe and Jeremy brought it up, the rush defense is not a disaster. I just look up real quick here in terms of yards per game. They're 15th in the league at 123.4. I do know, though, that like the Seattle game probably played a big part into that. I think they gave up like 39 total rushing yards and was like good for like 1.8 yards per carry.
Right.
But I think that is something too of like you look at the two rushing games that got them as bad as they did. I think one, a big part of it with Baltimore was that's how they build their offense. Their offense is built to beat you running the ball. Plus, you do have to worry about the running ability of Lamar Jackson. You always have to worry about that. Doesn't matter how good of a team you are, you have to worry about that. And then with the Dolphins, it was how quickly they're getting the ball out of Tua's hands, whether that be quick handoffs to get it to Devon Achane or him throwing the ball. I think also it was just a poor run defensive game by the Bills. They did not set the edge well at all. I think that's completely fair to say. I don't look at the Colts, though, even with Jonathan Taylor, as a game that I'm thinking, like, here we go. I mean, they're going to score all over them. Like, they're just going to dominate time of possession. I don't know. They're only a four-point favorite. I think four and a half, depending on.
Four and a half. Most, like, I think every single book has them at 4.5.
And so for that, I'm sitting there looking and going, you'll be fine. I guess. Like, in the worst way, I'm sitting there, like, you'll be fine. They're getting somewhat healthier. We'll see about the additions of Jordan Phillips and Quentin Jefferson. I like that Sean McDermott, when speaking with the media about it, wasn't like immediately like they're going to slot right in, even though they are. I mean, they signed one-year deals. They're right to the 53-man roster, but he's like, we got to see what shape they're in and stuff like that. They haven't played all that much this year.
Yeah. I think the getting in shape point is a good point, but I do think there'll be key pieces of this team. I mean, it's not like the defensive structure has changed all that much since they left. I mean, especially for Jordan Phillips, it was, what, a year ago? right?
For Phillips?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I thought he left a while ago.
No, because he left and came back and then left again, I thought.
Oh, I'm probably thinking of Quentin Jefferson.
You are thinking of Quentin Jefferson. Yeah, because I was going to say... Jefferson was here for 1 year in 2020, which, again, that's not super long ago, but at the same time, the defense hasn't changed that much.
Phillips spent time here in 23, yeah.
Yeah,
And then this year it's been New York and the Cowboys. Because Jefferson, I was talking with WBEN's Lucas Buckley yesterday, and we were both like, do you remember Quentin Jefferson? And we're both like... Very little, though. Yeah. So yeah. Phillips was here last year. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Yeah. No. And like I said, like I think that maybe they won't be factors right away this week, but this is kind of a nice ramp up week for next week, right? Like this is again not trying to overlook the Colts, but if you're going to have your guys come in on short notice essentially and play a soft opponent, this is kind of the week to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you have to worry about is Jonathan Taylor. I mean that seriously. Like Joe Flacco has shown me nothing in terms of, you know, what he had last year and anything he had coming into this season. If Michael Pittman's out, then you have to watch Josh Downs, Alec Pierce, and Adonai Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bills secondary can contain that. I'm saying that not so confidently, well, but at the same time.
I'm saying that fairly confidently. I mean, you're getting Christian Benford back.
Mm-hmm.
I think the safeties have been fine. We've got a lot of calls on especially before the trade deadline of what do you want to see the Bills add? And safety was, I would say was number one. Defense as a whole was number one, but I would say safeties kind of led the way there. They've been fine. The Bills clearly like DeMar Hamlin better than most fans. I would fully say that. I would also like to see more of Cole Bishop. We'll see if that starts to happen now that Mike Edwards, I mean, he barely played on defense anywhere. It's more, you know, Taylor Rapp, DeMar Hamlin, and then Cole Bishop, I think is going to be the future guy going forward. But they're getting healthier on the secondary with having both Rasul Douglas and Christian Benford back. You saw how important he was to the defense. You saw how important Taron Johnson was to the defense when he was out as well. I guess a big thing for me, too, is I thought Miami played the perfect game last Sunday. Like, that was a major part of it for me, is they played the perfect game. That was Tua, by a mile and a half, his best game against the Bills. And they still lost. Did the Bills play perfect? No. I've already mentioned the edge setting was terrible by the Bills' defense.
Yeah. But again,
and they still won. I look at the Colts. I can't see the Colts ever playing a game that Miami did. I can't see the Colts playing a game that Baltimore did.
I
can't see it.
I think you look at the edge setting thing, though, and I wonder how much that has to do with the fact that they get the Dolphins get the ball out so quickly. Right, like I think that you couldn't really establish anything on the edge with Greg Rousseau and Von Miller because of the fact that Tua would just get the ball, get it out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's something where it's like, yes, you want your edge rushers to be able to get in there, but if he's getting the ball that fast, I don't really know if they can get in there faster.
Yeah,
right. Like because there was one highlight of I think it was Greg Rousseau.
It was really early in the game. It was a high snap, and he's able to go in and get a sack.
Yeah, and he put the
that was
he
kind of about
put
it.
The dude in a blender to get around him, and it's like you have to have a perfect swim move or spin move or some kind of move to get around the tackle every single time to be able to get to the Dolphins effectively.
Yeah,
and that's why they're becoming a little. You know, there's potential for them to be dangerous, I should say.
Yeah.
The Colts are a completely different team. They don't really play with that play style. They don't have the wide receivers to do that. They don't have the quarterback to do that. I mean, Joe Flacco can get the ball out, sure, but he's not Tua.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm not saying that's anything great or anything like that, but at the same time, Joe Flacco's almost 40. The only thing they do have, again, is Jonathan Taylor. That's the one piece that terrifies me week in and week out.
Also sounds like Michael Pittman. So, I mean, even like one of the receivers, Michael Pittman, did not practice yesterday with a back and a finger injury. And talking with Kevin Bowen yesterday, he was kind of even up there in terms of like, I mean, they're having him play, but he's had 2 catches off 10 targets over the last 2 weeks.
Is it one of those things where it's like kind of a, he really wants to play, but he probably shouldn't because of the injury. And they're just like, well, we have nobody else, so let's just do it.
I mean, it could be that.
Because you've seen athletes do this in every single sport where they have something lingering and they're just, no, coach, I'm fine. Okay, I guess we'll play you then. And then it's like,
I think what's terrible is I blame that on the coaching staff.
Right, no, for sure, for sure.
Baker Mayfield is maybe the perfect example in Cleveland where his play was clearly compromised by an injury.
Yeah.
He played through it, the team got worse, and then they punished him for it.
Right.
I think you could almost, I'm not saying the Colts are going to punish Michael Pittman for playing bad now, but like, to Kevin's point yesterday, he clearly doesn't look right.
Yeah,
two catches off 10 yards or off 10 targets, not good by any means.
Right, and I'm not saying that at all is Pittman's fault. I think, like you said, the coaching staff needs to step in and say, "Look, like we understand you want to play, and we understand you're probably one of our best players, but you can't play right now."
Yeah, but like
there's at this point for the Colts this season, I'm not saying it's a lost season for them, but it kind of is. You don't really want to hurt a player that could help you in the long run. Same with a guy like Jonathan Taylor. Not to say you don't play Jonathan Taylor, but if a guy is hurt or potentially like lingering or dealing with an injury, why even try to sacrifice him? And for what? A win to make you, what are they, 2-7 right now?
No, actually, they're in a weirdly solid spot. They're 4-5.
Oh, geez, that makes it so much harder.
That's the weird spot with the Colts where, like, they feel like a team that has two wins. Because, I mean, you bench Anthony Richardson, and the vibes there are really off. But it's like, well, actually, you've won games.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying they're, you know, going to make a run for the playoffs now. But, like, you've won games. You've been okay. You're about a 500 football team.
I really thought they were much worse than that in terms of win-loss. I
feel like even they think they're way worse than that. So you're not off.
I mean, if you look at the way they're setting themselves up, it kind of feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's tough to look at them and say, yeah, no, they're a team that's 4-5 in a bad bad division, and, like, maybe they can eke something out in terms of wild card. Maybe.
I always, my thing though too on that, like I'm not for how the Colts have handled the Anthony Richardson thing, mainly because I don't care for, we got to make a wild card. Like, right. Who cares?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh has been doing that for years of they show up to the wild card and they get killed.
Yeah.
And I think the season feels lost by week six, but they're just going to be good enough to get in.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, that's where for me too, after the Bills broke the playoff drought, then it became, okay, but now you need to, like, compete in the playoffs. That's why it was so important to not keep Tyrod Taylor, but go get Josh Allen. Or just go get a franchise quarterback rather than, we'll just be here, we'll be happy to be, you know, middling, and just show up for our yearly, you know, butt-whooping in the wild card round. The Colts are already there with how many different quarterbacks they've had since Andrew Luck retired. We went through that yesterday. 10 of them. Anthony Richardson's the only guy in those years to start in two different seasons. They keep going back to that well. They gave up on Richardson after 10 starts. And I guess that's a big part of it, too, for me, is I just don't look at the Colts right now as a serious organization. I look at the Bills as a very serious organization and a very well-run organization for all the complaints we have. And that's where I cannot see them dropping games like this. Even you look at this year, too. The games they dropped were to a talented Houston team, which ultimately, after they saw their issues in that game and the Baltimore game, they addressed them immediately by going to get Amari Cooper, a week later after they beat the Jets.
Yes.
And then for Baltimore's one of the best teams in football. Mm-hmm. And really, it's a bad trick play call away from you maybe making it a game.
The momentum side of things.
But to be fair, you're not going to win them all.
Yeah.
You know, even in the Bills' best seasons, they're going to have like 3 or 4 losses.
Right. But I also look at the Colts in terms of what they are as a franchise, and I think we see this in football more than any other sport, is you have ownership groups and management groups not ready to just let go and start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills are one of the few teams that have done that in recent memory, in my opinion. And you look at the Steelers, they've done that for years. You look at the Colts right now, I don't know if the Bengals are quite there yet. The Cowboys are definitely one of those teams where it's, oh, we're just going to keep running it back with Dak. It'll work eventually. At some point, you have to pull the plug and just restart. I mean, the Bears have done that 3 times now, essentially. Mm-hmm. They did it with Mitch Trubisky. Didn't work. Waited a little too long with that one. Did it with Justin Fields. Didn't wait too long. Now you have Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, and you might be heading in the right direction, kind of. You still have some work to do, but you're at least going somewhere. It's not like you're just stagnant. There's other teams in here, too. The Seahawks are kind of that way, but they had to pivot really quick when Russell Wilson left. So, like, I can't really fault them yet because they still have been somewhat successful.
Yep.
But I just look at teams like that, and especially like the Colts, like we're looking at this week. I just don't understand why you can't just let go, move on, and start fresh. I know it's hard, and it's hard to convince a fan base to go through, quote unquote, a rebuild. But with the Colts, it's if you would have done this when Andrew Luck retired, right?
Oh, rather than try to. Well, I think that's
like now it's awkward and hard because you've been waiting so long. But if you did it in 2019,
but go back to that season though. They had just ascended to like, oh, we're going to be really good.
Yeah.
Oh, we're here. Like, Luck is healthy. The offensive line's awesome. We've got young weapons, what have you. Like, that was stunning when he retired because
right.
they were building towards it.
That was a shock.
There was no chance to rebuild there
because
you had this young team that you were thinking like, okay, here we go. And it fell flat.
But in
now,
years,
I think after 2 or 3 years,
right.
Yes.
In years since, they should have definitely, you know, restarted a little bit and then also not drafted someone that was a big maybe.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Anthony Richardson can't be anything, but through 2 years, he's only played 10 games, and it seems like he's not gelling with the organization or whatever is happening there just isn't working right.
I am frustrated, though. I really want to see him play the Bills.
Yeah.
Because he was a prospect I really liked coming out of Florida because I'm always going to draft the freak. If you have a good coaching staff, you can get that freak to be, well, what Josh Allen is or what Patrick Mahomes
right.
is.
Right, and that's the thing,
you know,
too. Like,
you know, to a more inconsistent aspect, but from a few years ago, Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And you can then all of a sudden, like, they're the franchise guy, and they cause problems for everybody. And it's just he has not worked even once. You have highlight plays. And for a fantasy owner last year, too, to start the year, he was rushing touchdown after rushing touchdown, passing touchdowns. Even to start this year, he completes, what, 5 passes in week 1, but one of them is a 75-yard bomb. And you're like,
right.
Okay, I can get behind that.
If you can get that a little more isolated, then sure. But the thing is like, there's always one every year since Allen has kind of risen to where he is. And it was Trey Lance a few years ago. It was Anthony Richardson last 2 drafts ago. But there's always a quarterback now that gets compared to Josh Allen. And that's like, it's kind of fun and exciting because it's, hey, the Bills have a player that the rest of the league is looking for, you know? And like we've always talked about, you and I lived through the drought where it was just, hey, what are we going to do? and now
the
it's
hopes and prayers of Trent Edwards.
But now it's exciting to see that sort of thing where it's like, you know, and it's also fun to see those types of players kind of come into their own because we saw what happened with Allen where it changed basically overnight in an offseason. But I think what's different between Allen and guys like Trey Lance and Anthony Richardson is they came in with those comparisons, with those expectations, but then they never put in the work in the offseason or had the right people say, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. Let's address this. Let's fix it. Allen did. Allen actively seeked out people in the offseason with Carson Palmer and completely changed his throwing motion.
I wonder, too, though, you put it like the right people around them, but also like for both Trey Lance and Anthony Richardson, and we'll get to your tweets here in just a second, and we're also taking your calls, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to give a vibe check here as the Bills get ready to take on the Colts, look at both those players. The limited amount of game time they had in college, the limited amount of snaps, and then not being able to really play or figure it out. Like, I think they actually are very similar in the sense of an injury, and then basically their team was like, we're done. We cannot wait for you.
Yeah.
Trey Lance, he was incredibly raw, barely played at North Dakota State. Did not help either that COVID ruined the FCS season, so he got like essentially a showcase game, and that was about it.
I mean, look at the numbers between Allen and Richardson in college. So Richardson played 3 years at Florida. He had 3,105 passing yards, 24 passing touchdowns, and played a total of 24 games. Allen, in 3 years at Wyoming, played a total of 27 games, but had 5,066 passing yards, 44 touchdowns, 28 of those in one season.
And this is the thing, too. Like he fully started 2 of those years.
Right. And also,
he was going to start 3 years, but he gets hurt, I think, game 1 against Eastern Michigan. And then
he played 2 games in 2015.
Okay, 2 games.
So, yeah. But the other important thing to note here is look at the way their teams played with that quarterback. Anthony Richardson threw 393 pass attempts. Josh Allen threw 649.
Which is crazy because that was a big thing coming out of Allen is that his team didn't throw the easy throws. It was a very quote-unquote pro style. He didn't get the bubble screens that Baker Mayfield got and stuff like that. And that was a thing, too, because I think Baker then had, like, double Allen's passing attempts. So then, yeah, you look at Richardson's and you're like, that's not good. And I know there's been a big talking point now in draft circles about quarterbacks coming out, too, of, like, if you haven't started for 2 years, don't come out of college. Stay in and start another year because teams, whether it's right or wrong, are not willing to wait for you.
Yeah.
Again, like the Trey Lance thing, too. He doesn't play his rookie year. then is going to come in, play his sophomore year, breaks his ankle, and that's it. I mean, that's effectively it.
Right. And it's also, if you look at Richardson too, I know, you know, he only played three less games than Allen,
mm-hmm.
but one, COVID could have had an impact on this because in 2020 was his freshman year. He played four games that year. You know how many passes he threw?
Like 15.
Two.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
In four games, he threw two passes. Now, I don't know if he, it doesn't say if he started or it just says he played in the game.
Yeah, I think he was.
So it could have
like
been later in those.
I think that's a rushing package that they had for him.
Right. So, but still, you play in four games, you only throw two times as a quarterback. That's not great, regardless of what you're going into the game for. Like, it's just your team is not using you the way you should be utilized. Next year, he plays eight games, throws 64 passes in eight games.
Mm. Yeah.
The year after,
he was not used as a thrower.
Here's the massive jump. In 2022, his sophomore season, technically, because COVID and everything gave him an extra year of eligibility if he would have stayed, he played 12 games and threw 327 passes. That's a massive jump from 64.
And it's still not even that much.
No, but it's just crazy to look at some of these numbers. Like
that's
the way
too, like
it
he, that's his
broke
only
down.
Year of starting. He right. plays four games in 2020. Starts none of them. He plays in eight games in 2021. He only starts one. And then, yeah, in 2022, he starts all 12 games that year. They go 6-6. It's the colleges, you see it too. They're not there really to develop you. It's the ugly truth. They're there to win games now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. It's not ideal. But it's also why situations like Arch Manning at Texas are so weird that he's actually staying. And I do mean that as, like, I'm happy Texas is doing it. I also know Arch is a different cat than most other guys.
Yeah.
Most guys would have left already because I need to go start now.
He's also in a different situation, too, because of the fact that he's highly regarded as such a good prospect in terms of what he can do.
Yeah.
He's someone where I think he'll stay in college for – like two more years.
It does sound like, just from everything how the Mannings have talked, that he will then play for 2 years. He'll play next year and then he'll play the year after.
Yeah.
And to be fair, yeah, you have the Manning family around you. They'll probably dictate it perfectly because I know Peyton Manning talked about like being very frustrated at himself for not just, as he put it, you know, just taking a deep breath, walking around. He was running everywhere. And then his senior year, he was kind of able to just relax.
I mean, you have
just
two,
play football.
You have two Hall of Famers as your uncles. I think you're going to be fine.
Eli Manning, I think started for 2 years, but played for or had starts within 3 years.
Yeah.
Manning started his freshman year as well. Arch will start his redshirt sophomore year, and then probably play 2 years, and then he'll take the jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a weird spot they're in. I think it's the most fascinating thing about the Colts. It's why I'm also frustrated Anthony Richardson's not playing. I don't care to watch 39-year-old Joe Flacco play for the Colts, especially when I'm looking ahead to Kansas City next week. It's like that's the game I actually want to watch. I think the Bills will be 8-2. I know there's some worries. We'll get to these tweets after a quick timeout, but real quick here, Joshua, definitely not overlooking, could go either way. If Coleman and Cooper are good to go, let's go. But if either one of them is unavailable this week, he thinks it's going to be a slugfest, especially if the defense can't slow down the Colts running attack. I think they can. I think a lot of it comes down to just how good is the Colts passing game going to be? I think that's a big, if the Bills are able to just zero in on get to Flacco, get to the run game, you'll be fine. He's not going to throw the ball nearly as fast as Tua, and he has zero escape ability like a Lamar Jackson does. And I think that's going to be the major difference here, is that there is no special attribute their quarterbacks have. For everything that we complain about Tua or, you know, give him crap for, the man gets the ball out quick and he puts it right where he needs to. If you take him off his rhythm, it's another thing. But if he gets it out fast enough, he's good. And then Lamar, of course, is a Josh Allen-level athlete, if not more so, that can just make magic out of nothing. And then, of course, Derrick Henry is a one-of-one running back. He just simply is. He's on pace for another 2,000-yard season, which I think he might be the first running back in NFL history to have two 2,000-yard seasons. I mean, It's something else, and I don't put the Colts in that category. I love Jonathan Taylor, I do, but even talking with Kevin Bowen yesterday, his rushing numbers when Joe Flacco is in go down compared to Richardson. And that's my thing too. If Richardson was playing, I'd be more scared. Even with his inefficiency, even with the fact that he doesn't complete a high volume of passes, his running ability, his escapability, his size, the arm, that scares me more than Joe Flacco would. 803-0550 is the number to call. Got to take our first time out here. Sal Capaccio will join the show in the 11 o'clock hour. Didn't really get much of an injury update.
on Keon Coleman. It's still pretty up in the air. I'm more of a glass half empty kind of guy when it comes to that, but we will see. Vibe check on the Colts. We'll read your tweets, get to your calls after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging out with you here on the Extra Point Show. So get ready for Bills and Colts this Sunday at 1 p.m. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com and go to the phones as David is on the line. David, how are we doing this morning?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. Want to talk about basically next week's game. Well, this week's game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not looking forward to it. Only reason is because it doesn't seem like Flacco is in sync with the players that he has. He's had to jump from team to team to just get these players where they want them to be. And I think with bringing in these two defensive players that knows what our defense is, I think that's a big plus because of the fact we can be able to just put them right into the game. Our offense looks absolutely great right now. And going into this week, the only thing I think is, like everybody else has been stating, is containing the run on Jonathan Taylor. If we can contain that run on Jonathan Taylor, I don't see how this game cannot just be, I don't want to say a blowout, but a very hand-in game.
Yeah, David, I agree, man. Thanks for the call. I'll say blowout. That's fine. I'll do it. Because I think that's right. I think David's right on a lot of points. If you can stop Jonathan Taylor, it should be a pretty easy game. And on the Joe Flacco point, too, he has had one good game. He has started four for the Colts. It's been one good. He has 7 touchdowns to 2 picks. A lot of that is coming in one game. It was against Jacksonville. He went 33 for 44, 359 yards and 3 touchdowns.
And we all see what the Bills did for Jacksonville.
I was going to say, we should all see what Jacksonville is.
How does Doug Peterson still have a job?
I think partially that is just we're just going to wait to the end of the year. There's no reason to put an interim guy that we're not really going to give an honest look as a head coach. We're just, let's get through this year, get a high draft pick, and then we'll go get our next coach. We'll make a run at Ben Johnson or whatever.
I don't want to go too far off on that, but what would Ben Johnson do with Trevor Lawrence? Would it be anything?
I think the problem is with Trevor Lawrence now is it sort of seems like some of the bad habits are stuck in.
Right.
He is not making great throws. He'll have moments, though, where he does. It's just not consistent enough, and so I think the luster on him has worn off. He is truly the guy that, like, the new car drives off the lot, and then immediately the value depreciates. He's the guy that's like, well, I've owned the car for like 2 years, but it's a 2022. And it's like, well, yeah, but like,
how many miles are on it, bud?
Yeah.
100,000?
And like, you like to hit potholes.
Right.
So
yeah. You've driven across the country 3 times? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry. And so
you go to London every year? Great.
Great.
Sorry. Back to the Colts.
On David's point, I know we misspoke, but I started laughing when he goes, I'm looking forward to next week's game. And I'm like, yep, same. So am I. And that's, I feel bad. Our producer here today, Trevor Hauer, is a Colts fan.
He's got the Colts hat on and everything.
And I feel bad because like, I'm telling him in the break, and I'm like, dude, it's not that I don't want to play your team. I don't care to watch this game. I'm ready to let's get to
the next one. He doesn't care to watch this game.
My only motivation is just loyalty. That's all I have with this team right now.
It's the best.
So like, everyone's gonna clown on me. How are you a Colts fan in Buffalo? I'm just like, loyalty. Peyton Manning's my favorite player of all time.
That's fair.
Ugh,
Josh Allen's just like Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Join the dark
except
side.
Peyton Manning couldn't run.
That's very
Manning had no wheels.
He had a great run against the Bills for a touchdown.
That he did.
One time.
Who could forget?
It's fine. Peyton Manning with the handoff fake bootleg. Iconic. Iconic.
I mean, he has a statue right outside of Lucas Oil Stadium. Rightfully so.
He built it. I mean,
that's the house that Peyton built.
Yep.
That and the RCA Dome, but yeah.
That's fine.
That's fine.
But, oh, man, like I guess the Colts are an uncomfortable team, too, because I really bought into all the hype for them this offseason, them and Houston.
I mean, it was fair because, I mean, Richardson and Stroud were both very electric. Well, Stroud in a much different way.
But Richardson in a small sample size,
right.
you were excited about. And you were interested.
And then it's like, oh, what if he doesn't get hurt? What happens then?
Mm-hmm.
But again, what happens in the offseason is very important, especially after a rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, Richardson was hurt, so you got to wonder how that affects the offseason.
But then
for
you
him.
Saw what Shane Steichen was able to do in his first year there with Gardner Minshew. I think there was understandably some belief that, hey, like, they've got
some
here.
It's a good coach, and it's a team that could win once they get their young guy.
Solid weapons, Michael Pittman Jr., Josh Downs, obviously we're seeing he's come along. But then they go out and draft A.D. Mitchell, and I guess there was this really belief that, like, they were going to take the next step you want to see, and instead it's been a clown show. I mean, again, like, we didn't even bring it up to Kevin yesterday, but hearing Jim Irsay's daughter is on the sidelines.
Yeah, that's weird.
With headphones on, and you're like, all right, I know Dallas is crazy, but come on. And,
yeah.
But then you remember Jim Irsay's the guy that tweets about all their transactions, and they don't actually have like a Colts PR page like the Bills have.
He's their PR page.
He's their PR page. So like, it makes all the sense in the world, but you're just like.
Like if she was an assistant coach, sure. But like, if she doesn't have a title and she's just hanging out down there, that's kind of.
That's insane.
It's like you're having like, just like the hawk watching over the mouse trying to make its next move.
Yeah, I don't.
Like ready to just fire Shane Steichen. It's such a weird move.
I don't like anything about this game in a very different way from where, you know, Baltimore. I was nervous. I don't like my feelings on this game, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But I was nervous they were going to lose. I don't like this game for the sheer fact of I don't really want to watch this game. I'll probably like a lot of the highlights afterwards, but knowing the Chiefs are next, and then the bye, and then San Francisco, you've got the meat of the schedule coming up, and I'm like, that's what I want to see right there. That's what I'm paying money to watch, you know, kind of deal.
There's a tweet that somebody tweeted at you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can find it real quick here. It was from JT. Yeah, right here. So from JT, not only should we beat Indy, but if Josh wants a real shot at MVP, this needs to be a highlight mm-hmm. game. I like our chances against KC. Our defense should perform well. The point about this being a highlight real game, that's 100% true. If this is really that bad of a team and you think the Bills can go out there and do that and you think Allen deserves MVP, these are the types of games where MVP caliber players go out there and put up 40.
Yeah, they put up, you know, four touchdowns. He's out of the game by the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And granted, most of the second half talking points by the broadcast is, well, when you look ahead at their schedule, oh, who comes to Orchard Park next week? And like, and that's what it becomes.
Right. But at the same time, though, you do have a lot of injuries to the wide receiver room.
That is a big thing because I mentioned it at the outset of the last segment, too, of just I'm a glass half empty kind of guy right now when it comes to the health of Keon Coleman. I think they are going to be sort of preparing him for either Kansas City next week or the bye week and get healthy. Sean McDermott has been sort of coy with how he phrases this when he's meeting with the media of, well, it's an ongoing situation. We don't know if it's going to be longer than this week, but he also isn't going to be ruled out for this week. And it's just, it's a bit much. It's a bit much for me.
Yeah.
And then Amari Cooper, I think, should be healthy. He was limited yesterday, but he was mm-hmm. limited all week last week. And I assumed that last week was more of just precaution. He's not totally there. We're gonna slow play this a little bit. And also yesterday was a walkthrough. If he's still limited today, I think that might be a signal of he may not be playing this Sunday. But if it's him, Shakir, Kincaid, I feel really good about that passing attack against a not great Colts defense.
You also have Cook.
And Ray Davis.
They both have looked great. Ray Davis has popped off a few big catches, which that'd be interesting if that continues. I'd love to see that. If you have a pass-catching running back like Ray Davis that can just go out there and torch defenses.
I love what they have found in Davis and Cook.
Yeah.
I'm also now part of the group that wants Ray Davis to have more touches than
Ty Johnson?
No, than James Cook.
Oh.
I think I'm there with Ray Davis.
Mm.
He is more of the runner that I like watching, which is he just bounces off tackles.
Yeah, that's fair.
He makes the correct runs, what have you. And it feels like there's a big play with him 50% of the time he touches the ball.
What's his run, like, average yards per rush?
I can grab that for you here.
Let's see. Compared to James Cook. I'll pull up James Cook. You pull up Ray Davis. We'll do it that way. So James Cook this year.
I have them both. James Cook's at 4.6. Ray Davis is at 4.3. With that being said, though, James Cook has had 109 rushing attempts to Ray Davis's 61.
Fair. That's a good point.
Now, you could argue, though, that if Ray is up there, all of a sudden he's dropping out of four
mm-hmm.
and that he's not going up. Because that was a big argument years ago with C.J. Spiller.
Yeah.
Where he has a great year, and then the moment they start giving him the rock a ton, his numbers dipped.
What is weird about that, though, is it feels like Ray Davis is going on longer runs. Like, it feels like every time he touches the ball, it's going to be a 7-yard run.
I think it's partially, too, because in his 10 receptions, he's averaging 14.9 yards per catch.
Whoa.
That also could be due to the 63-yard touchdown.
Right. And the 48-yard catch in the Jets game.
Mm-hmm.
42-yard?
42. So I think that might be a big reason why is that he's had...
Like, if you take those two out, then he's got 8 catches for how many yards?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is. He had 1 catch against Tennessee, 6 yards. 1 catch against Houston for 4 yards. 1 catch against Jacksonville for 1 yard. 1 catch against Miami that ultimately went for -1. And then 1 catch against Arizona that went for 14. It's those two plays.
Yeah.
It's those two plays. And that's what's building it up of, like, he's been awesome. Is he has a 42-yard catch and a 63-yard catch.
Done.
That's fair.
That stinks.
Nope, still there. I'm staying to it. I've loved what I've seen from him.
Like, he's still a very good player, and he looks really good. And I do like him, but I think that James Cook, I think what they're at right now in terms of the split is good. I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of like a 60-40 split at this point.
He has been the better runner, though, over these last 4 games. Against Houston, James Cook, 20 rushes, 82 yards, good for 4.1 average. And then for Ray Davis against Houston, did he not play
nothing
against Houston?
Yeah. No rushes against Houston.
Yeah, no rushes against Houston. But then against New York, he goes 20 for 97, good for almost 5 yards per carry. Against Tennessee, 5 for 41, 8.2 yards per carry. Then for Cook, 12 for 32.
Hmm.
That's a big thing. I mean, that's below 3 yards per carry.
Right. I think that's why it feels like he's running 7 yards per carry, because the past 4 games, like, it's kind of recency bias, right? Like, it's the past 4 games that I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Because, one, he really wasn't anything in the first 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
And, two, the past 4 games, they've been leaning on him more. So it's like, that's just kind of...
It does feel like he's getting more touches. I don't necessarily know if that's true, but it does feel like he has now kind of become more of a focal point since the Jets game.
I mean, since the Jets game, he's had 35 rushing attempts.
And before that, yeah.
He had... He had just over 20.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're using him more. Again, I overall, though, they have a good rushing attack.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing, too, is it's nice that you have that two-headed monster,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And you can even throw Ty Johnson in there every once in a while, in like a third and short kind of sort of situation.
Or a big pass play, because why not?
Yeah, right. And that's where it's...
Doesn't he have 2 of them?
He does.
Oh, my goodness.
I think. but that's where it's nice, because I feel like the absence of a guy like Keon Coleman and the potential absence, well, potential absence for both, because Coleman's not ruled out yet, but the potential absence of Coleman and Cooper, if you just throw the ball to Ray Davis or throw the ball to James Cook or even Ty Johnson, like, those guys can get you as much yardages as Mac Hollins. They can get you more yardage than Curtis Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot to be desired there, and I think that's going to be a big piece this week if one of or both of Cooper and Coleman are out.
I'd be very surprised if both of them were out. I would be too. Surprised. That would be the only time where I'd be nervous, because then you go back to Mac Hollins is your leading outside wide receiver. You've gotten 0 from Curtis Samuel. I literally at this point cannot expect anything.
But honestly, though,
and then now
the
it's
way
Khalil
we're
Shakir, and I love Shakir, but he is best in the inside role.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have no one on the outside to drag any coverage away from him. That would be my only fear, is if both of them are out, now all of a sudden, just purely based off of, you know, who you have left,
it
becomes a close game.
But the way we've been talking about this game, though, even if Coleman and Cooper are out, how much does that move the needle?
I think in terms of if you're...
Because the Colts offense still would probably be missing Michael Pittman. And it's still going to have Joe Flacco as quarterback.
Sure. I think for me, it's not going to end up moving, I think, the betting line.
No.
Like,
no.
It'll probably stay 4 to 4.5. It might move down to 4, sure. In terms of how I feel about it, though, it will change. Now, all of a sudden, it will be a game I'm going to try to watch the entire thing or keep up on it aggressively, because it's now all of a sudden, I mean, you don't have any of your outside weapons. And it's due to wrist injuries out of nowhere that's like infecting the team.
Well, and also, too, if you look at the amount of rushing yards per attempt that the Colts give up have given up so far this year, it's about 4.4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what your running backs are averaging.
Yeah.
About 4.5 rushing yards per attempt. And I'm not saying you have to rely on your running game, but if Cooper and Coleman are out, you could lean more into it than you normally do. I think you'd still be successful. I don't want it, and it wouldn't be like a blowout game, but I think it would still be a successful game. I think you'd still win.
Yeah, they just that passing game, when they don't have the outside weapons they need, it goes away quick. And when you become so run dependent or pass dependent, it has caused problems this year for a number of teams, not just the Bills. But we've seen when they don't have their outside weapons, 9 for 30 against Houston, and they're not particularly dangerous this year, even with them being 6-3. 803-0550 is the number to call. Vibe check for this week's Colts game. We both feel pretty good about it up to this point. I think only there was just more certain injuries, certain, you know, inactives could maybe sway our opinions. I do want to give a thought when we come back after a quick timeout on tonight's game, Bengals and Ravens. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everybody. We got Thursday night football tonight. The divisional matchups. I've been loving the divisional matchups for Thursday night football because typically I always equate that. I mean, it starts the football week, but I equate it to terrible football, and namely the divisional matchups of the AFC South.
Terrible Thursday football.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best. As we heard Kevin Bowen said yesterday, the true TV division, when he's speaking about the AFC South and Thursday night football, I call them the Thursday night football specialists. Though tonight, we have Bengals at Ravens. The Ravens are debuting, I guess, like their cool all-purple look, including the helmet, which looks awesome.
Mm.
Very excited for that. You
like the helmet?
Oh, I like it a lot. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm a big fan.
All right.
And I know there was a little bit of hoopla this morning about who should be, or you know, who should the Bills fans be rooting for and what have you. And with that, we go to the phones here. Jerry on the line. Jerry, how are we doing today?
Hey, good morning, guys. I know it's probably early to talk about seeding, but I have a question. I've been thinking about this, and that is the fact that generally your top seeds are going to play the – obviously you're going to have the home field advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking about Baltimore. I don't want anything to do with Baltimore in the first round. So I'm thinking, wouldn't you want Baltimore to finish as high as possible – so that if you do have to play Baltimore, it would be either the divisional round or the AFC championship, so that you don't have to worry about playing Baltimore. They end up maybe a 4 seed, the lowest division. I don't think the Colts are going to catch them. So if they end up being the 4th seed, there's a better chance of you playing them in the second round than if they're higher.
Jerry, I think that's totally fair, and I can understand why Bills fans would not want to face Baltimore ever again. Thanks for the call. You're going to have to play them anyways. Whether it's in the wild card round, if they don't even win the divisional round AFC championship, you'll probably have to see them again unless they get bounced early, which, to be fair, they have been known to do, especially when Lamar Jackson's been a quarterback. They have not been a team that typically does make deep playoff runs, last year being their first time at doing so. With all that being said, I don't care. I'd rather get teams at home. I'd rather,
right. Yeah.
That's where I'm at. I know the Bills at home the last few years have actually kind of like, I guess, disproven the theory that you want to get home playoff games. But if I'm looking at a team like Baltimore compared to a team like Kansas City, I'd much rather get Baltimore having to travel on the road.
You've beat
I
them
don't
at home
trust
before.
Them yet.
You've beat them at home before in the playoffs.
You beat them at home before in the playoffs, the famous pick six by Taron Johnson in 2020. And that's where I'm at. I'd much rather Baltimore and Houston keep losing games. Keep losing games. I don't want any tiebreakers. I want the Bills to be in that fight for the 1 seed. And I think that's the thing. And at Jerry's point, I don't think it's actually too early yet to be talking about seedings. We're at a point now, the Bills are 7-2. You know, they're looking to be 8-2 at this point. I think it's more than fair to be looking at seedings, especially when you've got Kansas City next week. And for me, that's my thing. I'd much rather Baltimore lose tonight to Cincinnati. Cincinnati maybe claw their way in there, but I'll be perfectly honest, Josh, I don't find Cincinnati to be as dangerous as they were the last few years when Buffalo had a very difficult time playing them. They are still good. I don't want to discredit them. They are still good. Just, I don't think they're that level that they freak me out at like they have the last 2 years. And if I can maybe be in that fight for the 1 seed,
if I beat Kansas City next week, I don't want Baltimore potentially being there with tiebreakers.
Right.
That's mainly what I'm looking for. I want Baltimore and Houston away. I'll worry about that playoff matchup if it shows up. I'm right now worried more about the one seed. And for right now, if Baltimore and Houston keep dropping games and those tiebreakers mean nothing, that's where I'm at this point.
I'm right there with you. I think tonight is go Bengals, please beat the Ravens, and then after that continue to just kind of hang out in mediocrity.
I mean, or tie, because then it hurts everybody. 803-0550 is the number to call. Vibe check on the Colts game this weekend, or what are your thoughts on Thursday Night Football? I think we're both here, me and Josh, on the Bengals beating the Ravens tonight. Would love to hear your thoughts.
We are not both on the helmet, though. Well, the helmet's an abomination.
That's where you're wrong. Again, 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Short term, long term. It's not like you're in a position necessarily to get on a run with Flacco. And then long term, I mean, he turns 40 in January, and what are you doing? Are you going to about to have one of the more awkward off seasons in Colts history of, yeah, Anthony Richardson, we just benched him for fun. Like, trust us, year three, this is going to be the year. 10 starts, et cetera, et cetera. 2025, you know, that's where he's going to really take off. It's just a very awkward time for the Colts, their fan base, and their franchise.
Kevin Bowen on yesterday with me and Josh hanging out, talking Colts.
Hey, that's us.
Yeah, he didn't sound too thrilled about
the
what they
true
were doing.
TV division.
The true
my favorite comment of the day.
I love that so much. As a March Madness fan too, I still like, and we all know, like the NCAA tournament. I am like the crazy guy. Again, I watch college basketball in November.
Yeah.
I still can't remember what channel True TV is on. I have to look it up.
Me
every
too.
Year.
And I also every once in a while you get the odd like U.S. soccer game on there.
Yep.
Or like a baseball game in the postseason, like one of the wild card games. Yep. Just like, eh, who cares?
But it's like
it's just
like,
thrown
it's like,
over
where
there.
Where is it? What?
In between reruns of Big Bang Theory and I don't even know.
By the way, Big Bang Theory, real quick. How did their spinoff?
Get a spin-off. Yeah, no, I hate that.
What is this, the 70s and 80s of television?
I mean, listen.
Where everything was a spin-off?
There was a short period where Big Bang Theory was kind of a good show.
It's like the first like two or three seasons,
yeah, right?
When it was first coming out.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of funny. It fell off. Then they bring in the whole Young Sheldon thing, and that really didn't fly.
See,
for
I
me.
A lot of people loved it, though.
Yeah, I hated it.
I
hated the aspect
on Twitter.
It made
it.
No sense to me. And then now,
the least interesting
now there's two completely different side characters getting a spinoff, and then apparently there's other side characters from the original show getting another spinoff. What are we doing?
I love cable television.
This is like love this it. Is going from the True TV of football divisions to like the NFC East in 2015 when it was the Cowboys kind of.
Anytime a team wins the division with a 7-9 record, an angel
we
gets
have,
their wings.
We have to ask questions.
So good. No, that's my favorite thing. Like in football, is when a division is so bad that the winner has a losing record. It is my favorite thing in
football. Speaking of other divisions that are kind of weird, can we talk about why you like this Baltimore Ravens helmet?
It's more why you don't like it. That is
what phenomenal. Are you talking about?
The Ravens are debuting their quote unquote purple rising uniforms. They have it's a full purple look, including a purple helmet. It looks amazing.
Not even a great like name, purple
and
rising.
That's the old Ravens logo, I think.
I think it's an adapted Ravens logo.
Yeah,
exactly the same.
Yeah, but that one looks a lot like when they first got to Baltimore and became the Ravens. Like that, because it's the straightaway Raven look.
They've clearly missed it on this one.
Clearly missed.
You could have done okay. There are goaltenders in the NHL in the late 90s, early 2000s. They adopted some of them adopted this. They would go with like the tiger on their mask, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like Linus Ullmark did this when he was with the Sabres. The adapted minion where the eyes are on the forehead and the mouth is like the opening of the helmet.
Yeah. Yep.
The Ravens should have done that. The eyes on the forehead, not on like the side of the helmet, but like where eyes would be on someone's head. Like if you think about like up on your forehead, obviously, but like you make it look like a face. You could still have the designs of like the feathers like going on the side, and then you could have the beak kind of coming into the mouth guard. Right? Like the sides of the beak are like right where your ears are.
I feel like that's too much.
No, you're going in an alternate helmet. You got to go fun. You got to be exciting. Do something like that. You already had it kind of with the sideways Raven with your normal logo. You could have easily expanded.
I do want to know why they picked the different Ravens logo, like the front facing.
Yeah.
I want to know. You could have just kept the other.
You could have just kept the other logo and slapped it on a purple helmet. And called, hey, look, here's our new purple helmet.
I'm an overall just a big fan of like the all purple look.
It should have been.
I think that's the key. It's just the all purple.
That's
look.
Fine. The helmet though should have just kept. Done an actual face every like the Eagles kind of, but like obviously it's Eagles wings, but like or the Rams with the horns. That's kind of like what you're going for, because like think about it. If you're looking at a ram, the horns start to come out of the ram's head and they come around by their ears. That's what the Rams helmets are. You could have done that with a raven. It's not that hard.
That's fair. That's probably fair.
Come on.
That's probably fair.
Have I talked you out of it?
No.
Come on.
No, I'm still there.
What is it going to take? Like, think about this. I'm gonna draw this up. I'm going to go get a graphic design degree and draw this up.
You know what it's going to take? Them scoring like 3 points in this uniform.
That's fair.
That is really a good point.
It is a
stupid thing for me, and I know it. The best looking uniform. I could love it dearly. If you're bad in it, I will hate it. The only uniform that breaks that trend for me, creamsicles for Tampa Bay. That's the only one.
Yeah, no.
That's the only one.
They were always bad in that, though. So that's fine.
And that's the thing is they were always bad in it. And then, I mean, they had periods where they were good, but then they eventually do change. They win the Super Bowl in the quote-unquote current uniforms.
Yeah.
But I love those ones. If the Ravens go out tonight and are terrible in these, I'll think they're terrible.
I
can't explain it past that.
Two things. One, I remember when they announced this and like they posted like the picture and it said like Purple Rising or whatever. It looked like they took a purple helmet, quickly slapped on an AI Ravens logo thing. Because there was shine all over the helmet, and then when you get to the logo, it's just no shine. It looked so rushed. And it was just, what are you doing?
You never want to be compared to AI. That's tough.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, do better. You're an NFL organization. Do better. But also, I've stumbled upon their old 96 to 98 helmet with the B crest with the wings.
Yeah.
That one is good. I like that one because it's completely different from your original logo, and it also looks good. The Raven coming at me just kind of, it doesn't look intimidating.
You're talking about when they got like the B?
The B in a shield with Ravens written above it, and then like the little like Maryland type design on the bottom in the very bottom corner.
I do see that.
And then the wings coming out of the crest.
Yeah, I see that. And I think Shannon Sharp when he was with Baltimore. And I don't want to say that's necessarily a good thing. He may not even been there at the time when those were their uniforms.
That was 96 to 98.
He may not have been there at that time, but like that's what I think of as like a random free agent signing they go get that like does not belong there, but there he is.
I'm also seeing some that are, I don't know if they're concepts or not, but there's one
Shannon Sharp, 2000, 2001. Yeah, he wasn't there at the time, but like, I'd see that and I'm like, oh yeah, random free agent, barely an NFL franchise.
I'm seeing this one helmet and I don't know if it's real, but the amount of times I'm seeing it, I think it is. It's a white Ravens helmet with a black stripe down the middle and then a blacked out Raven with like purple instead of gold.
I don't think that's ever been a thing.
I don't know, but I've seen like 7 pictures of it and you can like, it's like available for purchase. So like, I don't know if somebody just made a bunch of these. Ray Lewis, there's one signed by Ray Lewis. Look at this. Here, let me show you in real time.
In real time. Oh, I hate that.
I hate it, but it also doesn't look bad.
That feels wrong. That feels like a fan made it, felt better about themselves, and then they posted it, and everyone was like, what is this garbage? And it's like, oh.
This one's signed by Ray Lewis.
Well.
It has to be real. Hold on.
None of us make perfect decisions. I mean.
Overall, though, bad helmet.
No, I'm a big fan of it. I'm excited for tonight. Like this should be a very, very
good game. The game's going to be good.
Game's going to be good. Ravens are about 5.5-point favorite. They are at home. I'm excited to watch this one. I still don't love that Thursday Night Football is on Amazon Prime. But we're also getting ready for Bills and Colts, and we're taking your tweets, taking your calls on a vibe check heading into Sunday's game. I'm finding myself, Josh, I think you're finding yourself as well, sort of looking forward to Kansas City. Roy tweets in, gotta stack wins. Stack the box, try and slow down Taylor, and make Flacco try to beat you. And to be fair, I think that is probably the perfect game plan. It's obviously easier said than done. But you look at Flacco, his passing numbers outside of the Jacksonville game, not great. He was bad against Minnesota. And even Taylor, though, when Flacco's been the quarterback, has not put up the same rushing numbers he has when Richardson's in there. I will tell you, though, Josh Downs is a receiver that I'm coming to respect more and more, especially when Flacco is the quarterback.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
What's the scariest part about Jonathan Taylor?
I think he's good.
I was going to say, there's not a specific, because for me, I feel like with Jonathan Taylor specifically, let's say through the first quarter and a half, right? We're halfway through the second quarter. Colts got the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10-0 Bills, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've shut down Jonathan Taylor so far. I think the scariest thing about him is he can just kind of, boom, show up. There he is.
That's fair.
And then there's like a 50-yard run for a touchdown, and the game's blown right open. But I think
that's
true,
like every great running back. Like Derrick Henry, if you polled most Bills fans, what's the thing that scares you about Derrick Henry? Everything?
Everything,
and then the second thing would be he's going to pop a 75-yard run out of nowhere.
Right. But at the same time, though, I feel like Jonathan Taylor is just not really known for that, but he is capable of it, right? Like,
sure.
Think to the last time they played. Sure, all of his touchdowns were, I think, aside from the receiving touchdown, all of his touchdowns were within 10 yards, rushing-wise. Yeah, he had a 3-yard run, a 23-yard pass, a 2-yard run, a 10-yard run, and a 1-yard run.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, in that game, had 185 rushing yards.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He only, in terms of scoring yards, he only had, what, like 15 rushing yards to score those touchdowns? Mm-hmm. So there's still 170 unidentified rushing yards in there. And that's the thing that's like kind of a little nerve-wracking.
I think that's a lot of running backs, is that it's they're not having a good game. You're doing well, and there's the big run, and mm-hmm. there's the big chunk plays. Very rarely does a running back, you know, put up 200 yards because they're rushing 6-7 times per carry. It's a lot of you break the big runs, mm-hmm. and you're just sort of wearing down.
And then there's defense. Like one or
that's,
two.
That's maybe Derrick Henry's best trait, is he wears down a defense. He gets better.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like he gets better as the game goes along, partially because he's bigger than right. a lot of the guys.
And he's got more stamina, more endurance.
Yep. He is truly one of one. He should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, right? I mean, especially if he puts up 2,000 yards this year.
Does he have to win a Super Bowl?
No. I think especially as a running back, no.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's true.
The only time we bang the Super Bowl drum, I think correctly, is head coaches and quarterbacks.
Yeah.
After that, did you put up the stats? Great. Good for you. Like, right. Get in there. And Henry, to me, should be first ballot running away just because of how dominant he's been. And again, if he has a second 2,000-yard rushing season.
Jonathan Taylor's not
30
there yet,
years
is he?
Old? No, I don't. I know.
Oh, he's only 4 years in the league. What am I saying? Yeah.
Is he really that soon?
Yeah, 2020.
My goodness.
First season.
I still remember him in Wisconsin. Now I feel lesser on that, because it's like, well, yeah, because it wasn't that long ago. But, I mean, he's been awesome since he's been in the league.
Hasn't had a 2,000-yard rushing season yet,
He's
though.
Also only had two 1,000-yard rushing seasons, his first year and his second year. Second year was awesome. But we're trending towards that
he
now.
He has had
year.
The injuries, though.
Yeah, he's had injuries, holdouts,
what have
you. Looks like
he's fully healthy here now.
Yeah, and he's incredible. He has been a lot of fun to watch.
I the Bills' run defense against these really good running backs, right? Like, obviously, last week they shut down the Dolphins pretty handily, and they shut down the Seahawks the week before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, Zach Charbonnet had, like, negative rush yardage?
Kenneth Walker, kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, again, they had 39 yards total rushing.
Yeah. So I think that, obviously, against, you know, average or below average running backs, the Bills can handle that. But,
their rushing yards per game on defense is 15th in the league.
Right, but you look back to the Derrick Henry runs, mm-hmm. not even the big one, just any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me a little nervous about this game is you can, and sure, they're great running backs, him and Taylor and a few other guys, obviously. But so you expect them to do something great. But I don't know. I don't really want that in a game like this, right? Like, I want this to be one of those easy cruise to a win games, move on to Kansas City. Because then, oh, look, then you have the bye. So if anyone is banged up this week and they don't play and they do play against Kansas City, like, let's say Keon Coleman doesn't play this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like he could play against Kansas City, he could not, maybe he will, maybe he won't, and then he does.
Yeah.
Then he has the bye week to recover.
Yeah, you look at the bye week as everyone does, that's the time to recover. And then, mm-hmm. of course, Kansas City being the AFC conference game, you're looking at the one seed, especially if you beat Indianapolis, you are
right.
looking at that one
like,
seed.
This is one of those games where it's like, against Indy, it's like you don't necessarily have to go all out,
mm-hmm.
because it's a lesser opponent. But against Kansas City, that's the game where you go all out because, hey, the bye week's next week.
Yeah.
Let's get everyone healthy this week because the Kansas City, and then boom, you got the bye.
And then we're resting for a week.
But then you also have San Francisco, Detroit, LA, which is
super fun. It's going to be an awesome finish stretch to the season of just really good games to finish. You're going to get San Francisco, which...
That's going to be fun.
Lesser extent, but you're going to get them healthy as well. So you're going to get kind of the full dosage,
mm-hmm.
of San Francisco.
They've never played Josh Allen here.
Is the game here?
Well, George Kittle hasn't done that, I should say. Because I remember there was a clip, he was on Kay Adams, I think, and he was talking about how he was excited to play Josh Allen in Highmark Stadium in December, potentially in the snow.
I always forget when they played San Francisco, too. It was supposed to be a road game, but due to actually, I think it was forest fires, it was moved to Arizona.
Yeah.
I always remember that game because there's the beautiful pass to Gabe Davis over Fred Warner that you're just like, that's one of the best throws you're ever going to see over one of the best linebackers in football. But yeah, the 49ers-Bills aesthetic, too. On TV.
There's something about it.
It looks so good.
There's something about it.
It looks really good.
Well, they're not going to be wearing white this time, but the 49ers will. The white on the maroon gold, that looks so good.
It's a perfect aesthetic when you're looking at these games. Those Colts, again, not a great aesthetic.
Too much blue. And I like blue.
Yeah, but it's too much. You're right. Do we know what they're wearing for the Bills? Is it a whiteout game
this
week?
They might.
I don't know if that's come out yet. I always feel like that's come out already. I'm not sure.
I think it has. I'm doing a quick Twitter search here.
I mean, we all know how I feel every time the Bills wear the blue pants. It makes me just see red. I get so upset. The Stormtrooper look, the all-white look should be their main road unis. The blue pants are not good. They've broken the trend of bad losses in those. Don't get me wrong. But why test fate? Why are you doing that? No one can tell me why they're doing that. Who is the intern that keeps picking the blue pants? It's absurd. All of their best games are coming in the white outlooks. Like, those are all their iconic games in the all whites.
As I'm searching here for, like, Buffalo Bills uniform, I got the video of Allen coming out in the red jersey with the black helmet, and I want that so bad. Do you remember that, when he did that this year at the blue and red scrimmage?
Yeah, that's become a big thing every year for that scrimmage. What's Allen going to come out with that he can't actually wear in a true game?
Well, the more I'm seeing like all these alternate jerseys, like Houston has like 15 alternate jerseys. They don't really, but it feels like they have five.
Mm-hmm.
Five total jerseys for Houston. I want the Bills to do something like that. Like the red with the red and black helmet like Allen had on this past season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I want it so bad.
It'd be good. That'd be good. So, I've mentioned a few times I really won't be able to watch this game all that much.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Why?
Because I will be in the Charlotte airport from, like, 12:30, 12:45-ish, to, like, 5:45.
Well, I have good news for you. You're not going to want to see it because they are wearing white on blue. White jersey, blue pants.
Who keeps doing this?
Bills tweeted it out about 24 hours ago now.
Okay, yeah, so it's about right when they do it. But oh man, but so that's a big thing. And I looked specifically like, all right, is this going to be in the Charlotte area that I'll get this game? And no, I'm going to be getting Pittsburgh, Washington. Mm. Even if I can find a bar or TV in the airport to watch it, which I mean, it'll be a good game. This is my thing though. This is going to be my longest layover I've ever had in an airport. Typically, like the longest I've had before this is like 2 hours. I don't really know what I'm going to do to kill time. Like, I like walking around airports. I'll go get lunch, what have you. I'm going to run out of things to do, like, really fast.
Buddy, you're in an airport for 5 hours with no responsibilities.
I'm going to be bored.
Go watch football for 5 hours.
I'm going to, but, like...
One of those restaurants or bars is going to have Red Zone on.
That's maybe right. That's maybe right.
They're going to have Red Zone on. They can't not have Red Zone on. On a Sunday afternoon in an airport where people are waiting around for a flight... Like, that's every bar and restaurant has Red Zone. Right? I don't want to overgeneralize there, but I feel like you have to have Red Zone during football season or else you're just not going to be a successful bar or restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it just has to be a thing. So I think that's all you have to find the best seat in the house right in front of the TV and just wait for Scott Hansen to bring up the Bills.
That's going to be tough.
And then you get to see him in these lovely uniforms.
I've soured a bit on Red Zone. I've soured a bit this year. I've soured a bit.
Why?
Stop with the 15 boxes. I can't see anything.
The Octobox.
The worst thing in the world. No, it's not.
It's electric. Knowing that 8 games are about to score, it's crazy.
And you can tell nothing that's going on. Nothing.
Get some better glasses, pal.
Not a shot. I'm already going blind. I get better glasses. It's just going to be clear as day. I can't have that. But that's my big thing on Red Zone. It's like I'll keep it on when the Bills are playing it, you know, 4:25 or they got the prime time and the 1 o'clock window is what it is. I'll have that on typically because our 1 o'clock game in our area is just not good. I have no desire to watch it.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there and then, they'll go to 4 boxes and I'm like, cool, I can't. I can't see anything. Awesome. I don't know what's going on. Scott's trying to dictate what's happening, and he's doing a wonderful job.
Oh, he always does a great job.
He's doing a wonderful job, but I'm just like, I don't know what's happening. Really, what I'd rather have, and there's maybe a way I can do this, two boxes, one TV, both on the TV, and just two boxes, and I watch the whole game.
Wait, what?
So instead of just jumping back and forth to who's in red zone, give me just the one screen, obviously TV screen, and I can put two games on there.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Because that's the perfect
I thought
limit.
You meant like two TVs next to each other.
No.
With two games on. I'm like, people do that. Like, it's not that bad. But no, yeah, I think that could be an option. Like, if you pay for a certain thing.
That's the dream.
With Sunday ticket or whatever, you should be able to pick, like, hey, I want these two games or three games, up to four. How about that? Up to four games on one screen at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're in the red zone or not. I don't care if they're kicking a field goal. I just want to see them on my screen. That's a good idea. I feel like there's a service that offers that. I mean, it's 2024. That's got to be a thing, right? Red zone can't be the only people that have that technology.
That's my dream, though. Like, that's what I need right there.
That's fair. I like that because then it's easier to see.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see more at once.
Well, and also, if we're being honest, I don't want to watch every game. On that Sunday 1 o'clock window,
right.
Most of them aren't good. We have weekends, and we've had a few weeks this year already where it's been like really good games right down to the wire, like four or five of them.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, though, it's not. There's like one or two that are really good. Those are the ones I want.
Yeah,
I don't care that the Raiders are going to score against Carolina. I don't. Just have that down on the screen. Be like, hey, by the way, Gardner Mitchell threw a touchdown pass. If anyone cares,
woo.
I care what's going on in Baltimore, Cincinnati, or you know, Cleveland going up against Baltimore, Miami against Arizona. Like, that's what I care about. And I guess that's my thing, is I want those two games rather than having to go preview or previous on my remote a bunch of times. I just want those two games set up.
Yeah.
Make it perfect for me.
That's fair.
803-0550 is the number to call. Coming up after a quick timeout, we will get a word in on the Bills as Sal Capaccio joins the show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We are getting ready for Bills at Colts this Sunday, a 1 p.m. kickoff. And with that, we go now to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing very well.
Doing good.
Sal, though, I will tell you, I'm getting a little antsy's probably the best way to put it. I need a concrete Keon Coleman update, and I feel like we're not getting it, and it is stressing me out.
Well, the best we can do today, I would say, is just about an hour from now, the media will be on site at practice, and once we leave that, we are allowed to post what we've seen, like not during practice, you know what I mean? So once we leave the practice area, which is probably about a half hour to 40 minutes generally, somewhere in that time period, then we'll give you an update. And then even from there, all we can do is tell you, did we see him there, did we not? My sense is today, given what Sean McDermott said yesterday, given the fact he was a DNP yesterday at practice, even though it was a walkthrough, we're not going to see him out there. The question would be, do we see him on the side working with trainers? Does he have a wrap on his hand, a brace? You know, all those things are going to come out here in the next hour and a half or so. But I don't think you'll get an actual update on the injury status today, unfortunately.
It's just going to be a long finish to the week of like, is he going to play? Is he not? I guess good news. And you did mention, though, yesterday was just a walkthrough. He was the only player to not practice. I mean, there's a lot of names, and we've mentioned it a lot, too. It's the changing kind of nature of the NFL with betting, and you kind of got to just put everybody on there. But even with that, only four players were limited. It's pretty much a healthy team outside of the guys that are, of course, on IR.
Yeah, there's a lot of names on the list, and that's the way it's been. And as I've explained to you guys and listeners a lot over this year and last several weeks, you know, you have to do that in the NFL. Like, if anybody's getting treatment, and I think that, you know, even the Bills have more than your normal team, but really what matters is what happens on Sunday and who's playing and who's not. But when it comes to the actual numbers and names, like even Josh Allen is listed with his left hand still. And we know that, you know, that was something that happened in week one. And, you know, it's just sitting there and, you know, any sort of treatment. That being said, let me count the names. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 names. That's a lot. But out of those 19 names, only one not practicing. That's Keon. And as you said, only four limited, which is actually really good considering the names there too. Amari Cooper, Kyrie Elam, Reggie Gilliam, and Curtis Samuel. The one name I did not mention, Christian Benford. He was a full participant yesterday, which was obviously good. We talked to him after practice, and he said that he doesn't feel like he has any challenges right now with the wrist. Like he said that he's good. So obviously I think that's a really encouraging sign for this week.
So, Sal, one of the names you mentioned there in that long list is Amari Cooper, limited with a wrist injury. Is that something – what do you think that's going to look like as the week goes on here?
It's really tough to tell, Josh, because it was the same last week, limited, right, all week, that he didn't play. So, obviously, you think, you know, okay, they laid off him last week, he didn't play, so now we're beyond a week since the wrist injury occurred. That would be the home game the game against the Seahawks, right? That'd be the Seahawks when the wrist injury occurred. And he didn't play last week against the Dolphins. So you're obviously now in more than a week out, but it's still limited, and he didn't play last week, and he was limited all last week and didn't play. So, again, you know, these things are tough to tell. We will have Sean McDermott on tomorrow on this show, on the Extra Point show, and, you know, get more clarity on some of these guys, hopefully. And, you know, he'll give us maybe more of a concrete update. But I think as of right now, all we can do is kind of wait until then, because we're not going to hear from the head coach today.
So, Sal, we're doing a little bit of a vibe check here for this Colts game. It's in a bit of a weird spot in the schedule where they're 4-5, but nothing has gone right. We talked with Kevin Bowen yesterday of 107.5 over in Indianapolis, and I would say the word there is just confusion with Anthony Richardson and Joe Flacco and what have you. And while the term for this would be trap game, I do find myself looking ahead to Kansas City. I'm not a player. I feel like I'm allowed to do it. But this game is sort of weird now the Bills are only a 4.5-point favorite, and yet even if Coleman is out or Cooper's limited, what have you, it does have a feeling that they should be able to just get business done and get ready for Kansas City.
I feel like the Bills are the better team here, no doubt about it. I think that it would be, I don't know, do you guys know the line on the game? I have to go look at that. I haven't seen that, to be honest with you.
Bills are 4.5.
So obviously, in betting odds, it would be an upset, there's no doubt. But even if you just took the two teams at face value, I think it'd be an upset if the Bills went to Indianapolis and lost to a 4-5 Colts team that has definitely had their challenges at the quarterback position going in and out. Now, even last week with the change, and look, I think you guys would probably agree that, you know, it felt like Joe Flacco might be a better option for them, as much as it's a tough call and you want to see Anthony Richardson develop. However, that being said, he didn't play that great last week. 16 of 27, 179 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception against a very good Vikings defense, by the way. Of course, we have to say that, right? But, you know, it's not like he was the answer to all of their problems. One of the issues they're having is, for some reason, you talk to a lot of Indy fans, you know, Jonathan Taylor is not running the football. They're not giving it to him. He's has a nice yards per carry average, by the way. He's close to 4.8 yards per carry. And that's something that I think that's what they're going to have to do against the Bills, because he is a player that is very good, and the Bills have not had a lot of success stopping the run this year. Jonathan Taylor has 105 carries this year. That's 21st in the NFL. I would think that given who he is, he should be higher on that list as far as attempts this year. And I don't know, looking at bye weeks and things like that, but you get the point. Like, it just feels like for them, Indy, yeah, confusion's a good word. Like, I don't know if they have a true identity right now on offense. And I think if you talk to people in Indianapolis, like, that's really kind of been a big issue with them. They've also had, you know, some tough days on defense and some better days on defense. They're 12th in the NFL in points allowed, but a lot of teams are running on them. You know, the Bills have an opportunity to run here, and, you know, we'll have clean weather game. It's in a dome, obviously. So I think it's a team that if they were to find themselves, I think they could make some way, but it feels like they're kind of all over the place on both sides of the ball.
You mentioned Jonathan Taylor's, the amount of times he's run the ball this year. Joe Flacco, the four games he started, the passing attempts, 27 against Minnesota, but 38 against Tennessee, 44 against Jacksonville, 26 against Pittsburgh. They do feel like when he's in the game, they all of a sudden really want to throw the ball. Talking with Kevin Bowen yesterday, he even mentioned that Jonathan Taylor's rushing stats go down when Flacco has been the quarterback, just in terms of yards per carry, obviously rushing attempts as well. So I think that's been something I'm interested in too now that Flacco is playing. Of, yeah, you got to worry about Taylor, of course. But I also looking against the two teams that have run really well against the Bills, I would argue it's been a lot of what the quarterback's been able to do that has helped them. And yeah, not having Richardson in there, I think probably does limit what the rushing attack could be against Buffalo.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting stat. I didn't know that. When Flacco plays, Taylor's rushing stats go down. Is that what you said, right?
Yeah.
So, to me, that would speak to when Richardson plays, you have to account for him as a running back, mm-hmm. right? So when Taylor's in there, they're either dropping back to pass or handing the ball to Jonathan Taylor. That's really like one of two things they're going to do here. When Anthony Richardson's in there, he gives you more options, which is why I think they'd love Anthony Richardson to still be the starting quarterback. But at this point, they just kind of just can't do that because he has not played well enough, and they're in the middle of really, I mean, a playoff race, and you could even say a division race, I guess. At this point, they're not completely out of it. They're two games behind the Houston Texans, right? And right now with the Houston Texans issues and playing the Detroit Lions this week, you know, if you feel like if you're the Indianapolis Colts, you feel like if you can get this game against the Bills, you're there. Like, you're right there, ready to strike and maybe try to take over the division down the road when and I think they've already played Houston twice, though, I believe. I think they did, and actually Houston beat them twice. So you have to beat them by record, but you could close the gap to a game here. And I think that that's where they are, Indy, which is, hey, you know, this is a big game for them. You know, if they lose this game, guys, and they drop to 4-6, let me look at the conference standings. Right now they're 4-5 at the eighth seed just sitting outside. You drop to 4-6, now you're down in that group with, you know, the New York Jets. Well, the Jets would be like kind of the only team there, but now you're like 10 seed in the conference. You win this game, you're right there in the thick of things in a playoff spot.
So, Sal, another thing that when I look at Jonathan Taylor gets me worried is the Bills' defensive line lately. And obviously they bring in Jordan Phillips and Quentin Jefferson this week, but are those two really, I mean, we probably wouldn't know yet, but do you think those two are going to play at all or be impacts in this game? I think they might. Personally, I think they might, because it's just the fact of you have Jonathan Taylor as such a good running back, you might want some more extra reserves there on that defensive line.
Well, you can only really dress so many guys without taking numbers away, right?
Right,
so
that's true.
I mean, you have six, they have six defensive tackles. I don't think they're going to dress all six. So even as much as you need reserves, you can't, you're probably going to dress four or five. I would see five. That would be fine. I do think they could play this week, guys. I mean, like, look, they're down Dwan Smoot. They're down Dwayne Carter. And, you know, they need guys to, you know, be a part of the rotation. They need numbers, though. That's as simple as that. So I think impact is a relative question, right? What's impactful? Are they making big plays behind the line? Certainly that would be impactful. But even if they're just kind of allowing other guys to kind of do their job, that would be as much of an impact for the Buffalo Bills on defense. So I do think they have a chance to play this week. They're both on the active roster. We'll see. You take a look at those six defensive tackles. Could you see a guy like Zion Logue, who's been here now for a few weeks, could he be inactive and you go with the other five, Oliver Jones, Austin Johnson, Phillips, and Quentin Jefferson? Sure. I could see something like that, no doubt about it. So, yeah, they need to kind of keep guys fresh. They want to have that rotation, that healthy rotation. But it's not like you can just, you know, dress seven or eight guys on the defensive line because you're facing a good running back. I mean, that's going to take away from numbers from elsewhere, so you can't do that. I'm looking now, too. I want to look at the Colts and coming out of the backfield. That's a thing. That's one of the things that's really hurt the Bills this year, guys, is running backs out of the backfield. Because the way the Bills' defense is designed, they don't want to get beat by wide receivers down the field. So mm-hmm. they're giving up, you know, catches to running backs underneath. But the Colts haven't done that a ton this year. Jonathan Taylor, only 10 catches for 100 yards on the season. Boy, where are they? I'm even looking. You know what's wild to me? I'm just noticing this now. They don't even have a tight end in a top. Where's their next tight end? Who's their tight end? Is Goodson a tight end? 8 catches? Mo Alley Cox, 7 catches?
That's who I was thinking.
Wow, like, yeah. They have not thrown to the tight end this year.
No, I mean, it's kind of been like, if they've got a slot option, it's been Josh Downs and nobody else, really. But they've also used him down the field a lot as well. And I think you could also argue, too, Anthony Richardson, the efficiency of their passing game when he is in at quarterback has been,
right.
Almost, I would argue, without having the stats in front of me, historically low. So, I mean, that could be a big reason why, too, is that they're just trying to get anything else out of the passing game that they couldn't get with Richardson.
Yeah, and by the way, Tyler Goodson is actually a running back. So Tyler Goodson's a running back. Trey Sermon, he's a running back, correct? And then I'm trying to look at the name. So look at the – if you take a look, guys, you can do this. You guys play fantasy football. It might be easier, too. Look at the Colts receiving options. I mean, they just are not throwing to their tight ends this year. Downs, Pittman, Pierce, Adonai Mitchell. And by the way, Pittman is dealing with an injury. He's got a back injury and he's got a finger injury. So we're staying on top of what's happening at their practice as well today. Not only is it him, Michael Pittman, but also Zaire Franklin, who's the leading tackler in the NFL right now. He has an ankle injury, but he did play every snap last Sunday. So my assumption is he's just, you know, taking a day off on a Wednesday as a veteran. But, you know, it is something to monitor, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Sal, we also do have a very fun Thursday night football game tonight. I know that there was a little bit of, like, hostility about, like, who Bills fans should be rooting for tonight. I will say right now, I'm on the Bengals. I'm still thinking about the one seed. I want Houston and Baltimore as far away from tiebreakers or anything like that with the Bills. Where do you sit with tonight?
I think that it'd make you feel a little bit better if the Bengals beat the Ravens too, right? Which is, okay, like this Ravens team is beatable because they beat the heck out of the Bills, obviously, but they've lost other games. They just lost a couple weeks ago to the Browns. They lost to the Raiders. I think, you know, the fear is from Bills fans, what I'm getting. I tweeted it out from the Extra Point Show account, you know, what is the preferred outcome? And the fear from people is, well, you don't want the Bengals in the playoffs because if they are, they can be a problem. And I understand that because they have Joe Burrow and what they do. I would say this year, though, what... To me, you can't base it on what has happened in the past.
Yes.
I do think, to me, this year, the Ravens are a tougher matchup for the Bills than the Bengals because the Bills are more equipped to stop the pass than the run this year, and the Ravens can run the ball with Derrick Henry. But I totally understand the point. Keep the Bengals away from the playoffs as long as possible. But I think the Bengals should be the preferred outcome for me when I look at it because I agree with you guys. Like, the object to me would be to get the higher seed. What happens? Let's just play this out for a second, okay? Let me give you this scenario. What happens if the Chiefs, let's say, just stub their toe on a couple games and the Bills beat them? And the Bills have a chance to get the one seed. You don't want the Ravens tied with you because then they would get the one seed. Mm-hmm. So to me, the more teams you can keep away from keeping you away from the two or one seed even, I know one seed is pie in the sky, but even the two seed, the difference between the two seed and the three seed is literally playing that second game at home in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's where I'm at, and I've said it for a few weeks now. Here, I think the Chiefs are due for a loss. I'm not going to say they're escaping, but they don't look as dominant as an undefeated team, I guess, quote unquote, should. I know a lot of people brought up the 2020 Steelers for that example as well, but yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm still thinking about the one seed. Sal, I want to get your thoughts real quick on one other game here. Giants and Panthers is the Sunday morning game in Munich, Germany. What did Germany do to deserve that punishment?
Oh my gosh, I know, right? You know, I know they got the vote of confidence in New York, Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, but you just wonder what happens at the end of the year there if this keeps up. If they lose to the Panthers, I mean, you can give me all the vote of confidence you want. I can't believe the Maras would sit there and go, oh yeah, no doubt, we're just keeping these guys. They probably have to have some decisions coming down at some point. Like, it would make it, it would open the window, I think, for them to have those decisions, right? The Panthers going, Bryce Young again. You know, they played a better game last week against a team that had been reeling and has fired their coach since. There's no doubt about it. That was a nice win for them. And if you look at it now, as bad as the Panthers were, guys, for as many weeks, there's a lot of teams with two wins now. And, like, they don't even have the number one pick anymore. I think that would go to the New England Patriots.
Oh, man. Oh, I love that there's, like, this fight for the number one pick, and there's not a clear-cut guy for the number one overall pick. It is not that kind of year.
So, yeah, no doubt. It seems like that. Go ahead, yeah.
Sorry, real quick, one last thing. The Ravens helmets tonight, I hate them. Zach loves them. What do you feel about them?
And there is a right answer, Sal. Just be clear. There's a right answer.
I don't think it screams Ravens to me.
Let's go. Oh, come on.
There it is.
Oh, you don't.
Can I tell you guys something? It's funny you brought that up. I was on a Baltimore station yesterday to talk about Tre'Davious White.
Mm-hmm.
They told me how much they love the Bills standing Buffalo. And one of the hosts, I don't know both. I don't know both. Like, one didn't like love the Ravens purple helmets. Maybe they did, but one of the hosts just did not want the Ravens to go purple helmets. They're like, these don't fit us. Like, this is not like, they didn't love this. I mean, the Ravens with those black helmets are great. You know, yeah. I don't know. I'm not. I don't love the purple uniforms.
See, the purple is fine. It's the logo that gets me. I hate the way it.
I don't like that at all.
It needs to look like the old style goalie helmets where you have the eyes on the forehead and the mouth is the opening of the face mask. It'd be perfect. They were so close.
I can't believe I'm riding solo on this. This is breaking my heart. I'm glad you are.
Sal, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Enjoy practice. We'll talk again later.
All right, guys. Thanks.
This is what a way to end the week. I'm sitting here fighting battles alone. I'm Jon Snow, just facing down an army over here.
Settle down.
Great uniforms.
No.
Got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We've got Sabres tonight. The Steve Foley Law pregame show gets going at 6 for a 7 p.m. puck drop as the Sabres are on the road at MSG to take on the New York Rangers. We also got some college basketball tonight as well as the Niagara Purple Eagles are at Michigan State. That game gets going at 8 o'clock, 7:40 pregame. That's going to be on AM 1400. It'll also be on Big Ten Network for television purposes. I actually have that, so it's going to be Sabres game, Niagara basketball, going back and forth.
Better be just Sabres game. Come on now.
Well, we'll see how the first period goes. Don't go down 2-0.
Yeah. Hey, they always play the Rangers well. Knock on wood.
We'll see how that goes. The Rangers have been good this year. What are they, 8-2-1 or something like that, the Rangers?
Yeah.
And they have the best goal difference, or at least the best.
You're putting me down, Zach. You're putting me down.
That's going to do it for me and Josh today. Sabres Live coming up next after a quick timeout. This is WGR.